Good morning. How is everybody? A couple things. Michael just reminded me that next Sunday morning is one of the question and answer sermons, and the topic is gambling. So come with your questions about gambling so that you can write them on the sheet as the time. It is next Sunday, right? Yeah, next Sunday. And also I was made aware of something this morning. Kim volunteers on an emergency squad every week. And on Friday they got a call that a three-year-old had been abused by his father and was in a went into cardiac arrest. And the kid is currently in the hospital in a medically induced coma. And so that's kind of weighing on her mind. And I think we all can relate to the graphic nature of that. So let's add that little young child to our list to be praying about. You know, there's a song, I guess it was in the late 70s, 80s, something like that, called "This Must Be the Place." And there's a line in the song that says, "Home is where I want to be." And you're going all over the place and you're looking for this place that you want to call home, and you keep thinking, "Oh, this must be the place." And then you go a little further, "Well, this must be the place." Well, that was the life of Abraham. Home is where he wanted to be. But he knew the place that he was at was not the place. We just had that read for us. Chris just read for us that if he'd have been seeking a homeland, a physical land, he would have set up tent and shop and he never would have gone anywhere. Or he would have gone back home. But it wasn't. His home was somewhere else, and that was where he wanted to be. And as we think about our theme this quarter of fulfilling my purpose in the home, we have to remind ourselves that Abraham is our father. Quote, Galatians chapter 3 and verse 29, "If you are Christ, then you are Abraham's seed." We belong to Abraham. We are children of him through faith, and he is the father of faith, all those various types of things. And the Bible is honestly not full of a lot of great fatherly examples. God is the only one that is perfect. We don't have a lot who are really good. But Abraham is one that I think about a lot when I think about, if I ever have a family, how I want to run my home, how I want to run my house, because of the faith that he had in God. But here's where I want us to talk about this morning. As we think about home is where I want to be. If you want to get home, some say a vacation or work or whatever, what do? Whatever it takes necessary to get there. And so you prioritize things in your life or things in that day so that you can get home. And that's what becomes important to you. And what we're going to do this morning is we're going to glance at the life of Abraham. We're going to see three things that were important to him. And we can make the conclusion that if our home with our wife and our children, or you're single like me and it's your home, these three things need to be at the utmost importance of our home, like our father Abraham. So we know with Abraham, and I want you to open up to Genesis chapter 12. As we notice the very first thing about Abraham that was important to him, remember God calls him and God gives him this great promise. But before we're even told about the promise, verse 1, he gets the great statement of, "Go from your country and your kindred." And so in verse 4, Abraham went as the Lord had told him. Abraham could be summed up by a man that obeyed God. Obedience was of absolute importance to him. He's there with his family, and we know that his father, he worshipped idols. But even if your family aren't Christians, is it easy for you to leave them? Especially to a place that you've never been to before. Today we've got it easy, right? We get on the internet, we Google search where we're going to be living, we can find out who lives there, we can find out what the average income is, We can find out what that town is known for. We can see pictures on it. We can look it up on Google Maps, and we can see actually our new house and our yard. And I'm like, yeah, I think I'd be okay living in that neighborhood. And we've got it easy. But yet our heart strings pull on, well, my family's there, and I'm comfortable here, and all those types of things. But the Lord came to Abram and said, you get out of here. And you go to a place that I'll show you. And Abram said, all right. Who did he take with him? He took his wife with him. He took his nephew with him, Lot. He took his family with him. And they went. So you're Sarah, or Sarah at that moment, and you're Lot. Lot says, man, I got all my friends at school. Sarah says, man, I got all my friends. Why I gotta go move? Because the Lord told me that we need to get out of here. Abram went. Abram gets there, right? Abram goes in his life, we keep going. And in chapter 15, this great promise again is given to him. You remember, I'm gonna make you a great nation. Through your seed, all the nations of the earth will be blessed. All those various promises. And in chapter 15, God again comes to him and tells him the promise. But the problem is, in Genesis chapter 15, is that Abram is a little worried that God is going to fulfill this promise. I still don't have any children, Abraham says. I got nothing. The only one I've got is Eliezer. And God says to him, go out and look at the stars and all of those various things. And so verse 5, he took him outside and he looked at the stars. And verse 6, here's our famous verse. And he believed the Lord, and he counted it to him as righteousness. Go outside. Why? He didn't ask why, did he? He went right outside. He believed him. Now here's where it gets interesting. God says, okay, here's what I want to do. I'm going to show you that you will have descendants, and that they will be enslaved. But after 400 years, they will come back here. Four generations, they will come back to this land, and I will give them this land. And so he says, and pick up with me in verse 9. Bring me a heifer. That's the Lord saying this. This is how you'll know. Bring me a heifer. Notice how specific this is. 3 years old. A female goat, 3 years old. A ram, 3 years old. A turtle dove, and a young pigeon. Now, are the goats and the bulls or the heifers, are they walking around with birth certificates to know if it's 3 years old? But Abraham had all of these things. And so he probably knew which ones were around the 3 year old. But he could have looked at that one and said, I really like this 2 year old a little better. Or this 4 year old is really getting old and needs to be put out of her misery anyway. But that wasn't what he did, was it? Because verse 10, he brought him all of these and he cut them. He went specific. God said, this is what I want. And Abram said, this is what I'll bring you. He brought it exactly as he did. And of course, as we know, God entered a covenant with him that day that he would bring his descendants back. Well, you keep going in the life of Abraham. And in chapter 17, he gets the great command at around age 99 that, by the way, I'm going to give you a new sign of the covenant. I'm going to enter into a covenant with you. And it's for all of your descendants. It's for all your males. Look there in verse 10. This is my covenant which you shall keep between me and you and your offspring after you. Every male among you shall be circumcised. You shall be circumcised, and it shall be a sign between me and you. Now, he's 99 years old. His son Ishmael is almost a teenager. His servants are not children. And that would be very painful. Because they do it on the babies now, the Jews, 8 days. If you do it today and you're a Gentile, you do it in the hospital within hours, right? Right away. So that the pain is less. But Abram, verse 22, when he had finished talking with him, God went up from Abram. And Abram took Ishmael, his son, and all those born in his house, or he had bought with his money, every male among the men of Abraham's house, and he circumcised the flesh of their foreskins that very day, as God had said to him. You would see again in verse 26, that very day. I don't know about you men, but if I was given that, I would probably be a little hesitant. Abram was not hesitant. His servants were not hesitant. They did it that very day. Or he gets the command that we all mainly know and we think about, besides leave your family, leave your country, go and offer your son, your only son whom you love. And in Genesis 22 is where we have that. And he tells him again a very specific place to go and a very specific thing that he wants, verse 2. Take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains which I shall tell you. Abraham is probably getting told of having to go to these random places that the Lord would show him. But he goes. When? Verse 3. He rose early in the morning and he went. He saddled his donkey. Again, you don't see hesitation with Abram. It is a man, when God tells him to do something, he does it. Even when it will hurt big time. It hurts to leave family. It hurts when you have to be circumcised as a full-grown adult. It hurts to have to give up your child. So why go through it? Why do it? Because the Lord says, do it. If you care anything about your home being a place where God is important, I put that in quotes, obedience to God better be often and without hesitation. Because if your kids, as they grow older and they hear about things that you do wrong and they recognize things that you do wrong and that you know that you do wrong, and you just don't do anything about it, what's that going to do for them? Are they going to have any reason at all to do it on their own? Are they going to have any role model at all to say, yeah, mom, dad, brother, sister, they messed up, or they've been told to do something crazy, and they just don't really want to do it? What kind of example does that set for your house? It doesn't set an example, does it? Except for the example of obeying God is not as important as I say it is. Actions speak louder than words. Abram was not a perfect person. But when the Lord told Abram to do something, Abram did it. Does that describe me? The second thing that we would see in Abraham's life, which is closely related, if you go back to chapter 12, is that worship was important to Abram. I intentionally put this second, because oftentimes we put worship ahead of obedience. Where as long as I come to church, then that's all that matters. It's not that way. The first words out of God's mouth about Abraham in Hebrews chapter 11, by faith Abraham obeyed. In Genesis chapter 12, if you're right here, verse 4, when he is told what to do, the promise, Abram went. That was the first thing he did, is he obeyed. And the Lord told him, and Lot was with him. And he took Sarah, all those things. But notice verse 6. So they came to the land of Canaan, verse 5. And the very first place that they come to is Shechem, this city called Shechem. And notice what he does when he gets to the place. Verse 7. The Lord appeared to Abram, and he said, to your offspring I'll give this land. This is the place. So he built an altar there to the Lord who had appeared to him. He gave God his worship, didn't he? But what did he do before he ever went, quote, to worship? He went. He obeyed God. Very first place. I'm going to set up a place to worship God. Was that important to him? Without a doubt it was important to him. But without obeying God, was that worship going to be anything? The worship would have been pointless. It would have been vain, empty. There's nothing to it. So he moves, right? He's a sojourner. He's a pilgrim. He doesn't even get to stay in this place. He's just entered it. And so he moves to the place between Bethel and Ai. A small place of Ai and Bethel, the house of God, as Jacob will name it there of Bethel. He moves in between there, and guess what he does as you read verse 8? He moved to the hill country east of Bethel, and he pitched his tent with Bethel on the west. And there he built an altar to the Lord, and he called upon the name of the Lord. He moved to a new place, and guess what he does? He sets up a place to worship the Lord his God. But he has to leave there. There's a famine in the land. And so he takes Sarai and his family and they all go down to Egypt. And they get down to Egypt and they have some problems there which we'll talk about in a moment. But the famine is over and they come back up. And he returns back to Bethel and Ai. And guess what he does in chapter 13 and verse 2 when he returns? Verse 4 says, to the place where he had made an altar first, and there Abram called upon the name of the Lord. He didn't have to build an altar this time. An altar was already there. But when he gets back from his journey, what does he do? He worships the Lord. He called on his name. And then he moves again. He moves to Hebron. And you could see this. He moved there. And in verse 18 of chapter 13, Abram moved his tent and he came and he settled by the oaks of Mamre, which are at Hebron. And guess what he does again? He built an altar for the Lord. What does that tell us about Abram? Wherever he is at, he worshiped God. It didn't matter if it was a long extended stay in Egypt. We don't have him building an altar there, but I fully suspect that he worshiped there. But worship was important to him. To the point where, remember, he's coming to the Canaanites, and who are they worshiping? Idols. All kinds of idols. And he comes in, and he's got to set up his own place so that they can worship the Lord. That was planned. But guess what he also does? You would see him doing the same thing in chapter 20 with Abimelech, or 21 with Abimelech. There's this well. And they're kind of fighting over the well. And Abram says, I dug the well. And so he sends this gift to Abimelech. And there's seven little lambs. And Abimelech's like, what the lambs all about? This is my well. I dug this well. And so they called the place Beersheba, or Beersheba, because that's the well of the covenant. All of those types of things. Now, I want you to notice what happens there. They agree that, yes, Abraham, this is your well. But I want you to notice what happens at the end of that covenant. Verse 32. So they made a covenant at Beersheba. Then Abimelech and Phicol, the commander of his army, rose up and returned to the land of the Philistines. And Abraham planted a tamarisk tree in Beersheba. And he called there on the name of the Lord, the everlasting God. And I find this one to be a little interesting, right? What has he done in all the other places?
He built an altar. Well, what's he do here? He plants a tree. And I wish I understood the significance of that. But I do understand some significance. Maybe it's sentimental. Maybe you just plant a tree by the well so that you have shade when you go to get the water out of the well and some coolness. I don't know. But what is the emphasis here? It's not that he planted a tree, is it? It's there he called on the name of the Lord. Even when he's had this dispute, when they work it out, he called on him. And then obviously when he offered Isaac. When he goes there in Genesis 22, and Isaac's like, where's the wood? Or where's the sacrifice? The Lord will provide. And as he raised his hand to kill him, you remember the angel of the Lord stopped him. And what did he see over caught in the thicket of the bushes? The ram. That was caught. And so as we see at the end of verse 13, Abram took the ram and he offered it up as a burnt offering. Worship was not something that he took lightly. Worship is not something that we should take lightly. But worship is not more important than obedience. Because obedience is worship. And without it is nothing. And you would note that he planned ways for him to worship. And I would say he also worshiped by reaction to some of the things that happened. We see that sometimes in our life, right? Something will happen. And I think about him as he comes back from Egypt. You've been on a long journey. You've been through a rough patch, a really difficult stretch in your life. And you get through it. And the natural reaction might be to praise myself. Man, look how I got through that. When the true reaction should be falling to God and saying, thank you, God, for getting me through that. Do our kids see that? Does my spouse who is not a Christian see that? Worship must be important to us. And finally, appearance was important to Abraham. And again, this is something else that can kind of get in the way, that can become more important than obedience. Appearance is important, the way that people look at us. So when he's down in Egypt, we have not such a good example. He goes to Egypt in chapter 12, there at the end of chapter 12. And you remember what he tells his wife Sarah to say because she's beautiful and he's afraid that he will be killed because of her? She's my sister. Which is partly true. She's his half-sister. But to save maybe himself, and I wonder sometimes if it was to protect God's promise to him. So that they don't kill me and God can keep his promise through me and I don't have any kids yet. Let me just say she's my sister. But whatever the case, she's my sister. And they go down and they say, she's my sister. And it doesn't work out so well, does it? It'd be nice if that only happened once in his life. We get to chapter 20 and basically the exact same thing is done again in Egypt. And I want to focus on this one because we actually have the king talking to him here. Abimelech talks to him and he's like, man, I almost took your wife, but the Lord stopped me from taking her. And so you've got all of these things that happen. And he says, why did you do it to me in verse 10? And Abram says, verse 11, I did it because I thought there is no fear of God at all in this place, and they will kill me because of my wife. Besides, she is my sister, the daughter of my father, though not the daughter of my mother, and she became my wife. And when God caused me to wander from my father's house, I said to her, this is the kindness you must do to me at every place to which we come, saith me, he is my brother. You realize that Abraham was being a little deceitful here? But you know what Abraham was willing to do? Admit it. How many of you know people in your house that will never admit that they are wrong?
that's not a good house. We're all going to make mistakes. We're all going to sin. And the question is, are we going to man up to it and admit to it? Because guess what? We're going to get caught, period. We may not get caught in everything, but we're going to get caught in something. Am I going to admit it? Abraham admitted it. So I get the impression that maybe this was the last time that this happened in Abraham's life. That he finally got the message. And he stopped this. But that's a big thing. But I want you to see one more example as we close out this morning of where appearance was important to him. So nephew, go back to chapter 14 of Genesis. So his nephew Lot, right? They've separated, they've gone to different places, and Lot goes and he settles in Sodom and Gomorrah, the place where it looked beautiful, it was lush, but yet it was full of wickedness. And Lot is called a righteous man, but he lived in a very wicked place. And he is kidnapped by some other kings. And so these other kings, the five kings, they go out to fight. And guess who's got to come with his army to bail out Lot? Abraham does. He comes out to him. And so you see in verse 17 that he delivers him. He defeats the king in verse 17. And we have him meeting and conversing with two different people here in chapter 14. And this is what he says in verse 18. Melchizedek, the king of Salem, he brought out bread and wine. So he meets Melchizedek and he brought out bread and wine. And he was a priest also. Verse 19. And he blessed and said, Melchizedek saying this, "Blessed be Abram by God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth, and blessed be God Most High who has delivered your enemies into your hand." And Abram gave him a tenth of everything that he had. So what we have is we have this one guy, he comes out and he says, "Blessed be God of Abraham." And he brings out the bread and wine, and so I'm assuming that they commune together over this. And Abraham definitely gives him a tenth of all that he has. He would have some association with him. But notice the next king. Verse 21. And the king of Sodom said to Abram, "Give me the persons, the people that you got in this battle, but take the goods for yourself." Hey, I'll take the people, you take the spoil. But notice Abraham's response. "I have lifted my hand to the Lord God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth, that I would not take a thread or a sandal strap, or anything that is yours, lest you should say, I have made Abram rich." What is Abram doing there? He is staying as far away from the sinful place of Sodom as he can. Yeah, I'll go rescue my nephew. But there will be no way in the world that you will be able to claim that I have any association with you at all. Do we feel that way in our homes about sin and associations with the world? That does not mean that we do not have friends who are in the world. That does not mean that we don't work with people who are in the world. But do I give evil a chance to claim me as one of its own? When my kids look at my life, would they be able to say, my parents are as far away from evil as possible? They do nothing that could even be called evil. Or, well, you know, Abram didn't want any part of that. He cared what other people thought about him. The Rechabites would fall into that in Jeremiah 35 as well. Do you care? Could other people say something about you in your house? You need to care about that. It is important, but it is not the utmost importance. So if you want to be home with God, and that's the place where you want to be, guess what's going to be important to you? obedience is going to be important to you and your house. Joshua says, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And we will give Him the worship that He deserves. And we will be concerned with how others look at us and give evil no chance to claim us as its own. But we will stay away from that. This morning, maybe you're ready to become a Christian. You're ready to be baptized into Jesus, to have your sins washed away so you can walk in newness of life. Now is the time to do that. Or maybe you need the prayers of the congregation here. We'd ask that you come now as we stand and as we sing.